So just by way of reminder, I am recording these, just that's just obviously for your knowledge, but it's really more for anything as a resource tool, because I know that you're not always able to be here each week. So if you miss a week, it'll just make it a lot easier for you to be able to catch up or find out what we were studying from the previous week. So I think that is kind of a helpful resource. These usually we try to have them posted by about Wednesday or Thursday within the week. So usually by late week they are posted. So if you miss a week, that's there for you to be able to go back and reference. So tonight we kick off our study in the book of Proverbs. And I think about Proverbs, especially these opening chapters that we're going to look at this semester. There really are few things to me that are more convicting and encouraging than the words of a sincere parent writing or imparting words of wisdom to their child. There are a couple different letters that I came across this week as I was doing study for this that I think are really helpful perspectives or just some really encouraging letters of a parent to a child. Here I have an excerpt from Robert E. Lee that he wrote to his son during the time of the Civil War. And he says to him, "Deal kindly but firmly with all your classmates. You will find the policy which wears best. Above all, do not appear to others what you are not. If you have any fault to find with anyone, tell him, not others, of what you complain. There is no more dangerous experiment than that of undertaking to be one thing before a man's face and another behind his back. We should live and act and say nothing to injure of anyone. It is not only best as a matter of principle, but is the path to peace and honor." Pretty wise words from Robert E. Lee to his son during the time of the Civil War. I think of the words of Sarah Edwards, the wife of Jonathan Edwards, who is arguably the greatest American theologian in history. Sarah Edwards wrote this letter to her daughter after Jonathan Edwards died in 1700. She says, "My very dear child, what shall I say? A holy and good God has covered us with a dark cloud. Oh, that we may kiss the rod and lay our hands on our mouths. The Lord has done it. He has made me adore his goodness that we had him so long. But my God lives, and he has my heart. Oh, what a legacy my husband and your father has left us. We are all given to God, and there I am and love to be." Kind of convicting words after the death of your own husband to communicate to your daughter. And then I was even thinking, this is actually a card that I got from my father a few years ago when I was in seminary out in California. And I don't know if I've ever told my dad this, but you know, I've carried this around a lot of times. I use this as a bookmark. My dad is a guy of interesting words many times, but this is probably one of the more sincere, heartfelt things he ever wrote to me, and that's why I actually carry it around with me. And it says, "Scott, just a note to let you know that we are always thinking about you and Holly. We hope everything is going well, both at school and at work. Having you this far away is really getting old, but hopefully the finish line is in sight." Little did he know we were going to be moving back to Illinois. "We are already looking forward to seeing you at Christmas. It seems far away, but time flies, especially at this time of year. So we pray that you are growing closer each day and that we will all be made stronger by your example of stepping out of your comfort zone to go after what you want. Love, Dad. P.S. Go get some yogurt." I'm pretty sure he included $5 to go get frozen yogurt. Because he's awesome like that. There is really something special about the tender and loving words of a parent that is imparted to a child. And that's the backdrop I want you guys to keep in mind as we come to our study in the book of Proverbs. We have in this book primarily chapters 1 to 9, which is going to be the focus of our study for this semester, essentially a collection of letters by a father to his son. 19 times in chapters 1 to 9, the phrase, my son or my sons, appears. In other words, that's the real emphasis in the opening 9 chapters of the book of Proverbs. The author writes as a concerned father to his young son, hoping to impart essential life lessons to his child. And in the same way, it paints really the picture of what God the Father is instructing of his spiritual children, what he desires for them to grow in their own spiritual maturity and wisdom. So let's read the opening verses of Proverbs chapter 1 together as we kick this study off. Proverbs chapter 1, verses 1 to 7, says the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. To understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. As we kick off this study, and really as we look at Proverbs as a whole, the main point I want us to really be able to get out of this evening is this, that God desires to instruct young worshipers how to grow in wisdom. God desires for young worshipers to grow in their wisdom. In other words, he wants to do that so that they might live obediently and successfully in life as possible, as much as possible. And really, I appreciate the timing of this study because I feel like it's really appropriate having just come off our study of the Ten Commandments. In fact, one author appropriately described Proverbs as the Ten Commandments in shoe leather. In other words, this is really where the rubber meets the road and really begins to test your allegiance to God by the way that you wish to follow him, to be obedient to him. And Proverbs is such an important book for any follower of God, but particularly for the young and immature. That's really the context of why the book of Proverbs was written. The problem for most of us, though, is that we don't often recognize our own foolishness. We're wise in our own eyes because of worldly standards, whether it be our GPA, our success in school, our smarts in one area, our success in sports, or perhaps even our consistent presence at church. We think that we are wiser and we are better than others, that we have life figured out. It's really, this book is for those who want to truly learn and grow. If you're a person who comes to this book and you think that you already have life figured out, then you're not going to be able to learn over these next 14 weeks, whatever it is we're studying. You have to come with an attitude of humility. That's the context of this book. So there's a lot at stake, and it's worth our attention and study. So as we get into the study for this evening, I just want to give you guys three reasons why we should study the book of Proverbs. Based on the introduction here, three reasons why we should study this book. And reason number one is because of who wrote it. Because of who wrote it. The instrument that God used to write the book of Proverbs, verse 1, identifies as Solomon. He is the primary author. Notice that it says that it is Solomon, the son of David, and the king of Israel. Those are some pretty impeccable credentials to have. To be the son of the holiest king in Israel's history, to be the king of the nation. I know you guys probably read all kinds of different articles or things that are posted on social media, but I guarantee you nobody has the credentials like Solomon has here. Homeboy's got a lot of knowledge that he is about to impart to you, especially because we have to recount. Yeah, I said that. We have to recount how Solomon even got this knowledge. Turn over to 1 Kings chapter 3 real quick. 1 Kings chapter 3. I'm not allowed to use that language. Is that what you're saying? Okay. 1 Kings chapter 3, we read of how Solomon got his wisdom. 1 Kings 3, starting in verse 5, it says, "In Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream at night, and God asked," or said, "ask what you wish of me to give to you." It's kind of that genie in the bottle scenario, except this is God, so it's way better. God saying, I will essentially give you one thing. What is it that you would ask for if I gave you one thing? And Solomon said, "You have shown great loving kindness to your servant David, my father, according as he walked before you in truth and righteousness and uprightness of heart toward you. And you have reserved for him this great loving kindness that you have given him, a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. Now, O Lord, my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David, yet I am but a little child." Notice the humility there. "I do not know how to go out and come in. Your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people who are too many to be numbered or counted. So give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, to discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?" And notice the response of God in verse 10. It says, "It was pleasing in the sight of the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing." So notice here, God gives great wisdom to Solomon. God gives great wisdom to Solomon because he was humble enough to ask for it. And later in chapter 3, we read of a story that really demonstrates Solomon's wisdom. There's a situation, some of you might know of this story. There's two women who each have babies. And during the night, one of the babies dies because the mother accidentally rolls over on the baby. It's a really crazy scene. And so what she does, because she has lost her child, she takes the other woman's baby and claims her as her own. So in the morning, she basically pulls a switch on the babies. It's a really sick situation. And so they're going to Solomon because one lady is saying, "Listen, this lady took my baby. Hers died in the night and she made a switch. This is not my child who's dead." And of course, the woman's trying to cover it up and saying, "No, this is mine. You killed your own baby." And so you can imagine the complexity of that situation because Solomon wasn't there. There were no other witnesses. It's just the word of these two women. And so Solomon says, "You know what? Okay, we'll do this fairly. Somebody go get me a sword." He asks for somebody to bring him the sword and says, "You know what? Since no one can agree on this, we'll just cut the baby that's alive in half, and then each of you gets a half of the baby." And of course, that's a really morbid picture, but the woman who... the woman whose baby had actually died says, "You know what? Yeah, that is fair. Let's do that." But the mother whose baby was alive said, "No, don't harm the child. Don't bring any harm to the child." And it's at that moment Solomon knows that, okay, this is the real woman, the real mother, because she would never want any true harm to come to her own child. And it says that everybody was amazed at Solomon's wisdom. And over the years, his wisdom was put on display, not just for Israel to see, but all the nations. People came to him to just figure out, to see this on display. And in fact, Israel as a nation reached probably the height of their prosperity during the time of Solomon, in part to his wisdom. But I know what probably some of you are thinking, what about all of Solomon's failures? Doesn't the Bible speak to Solomon being a man who ended up having like several hundred wives, and didn't he do all these bad things? There's truth to that. And I think there's a couple things that we need to learn from Solomon as a result of that. The first is this: it speaks to God using imperfect vessels to accomplish his purposes. The Bible speaks all the time of imperfect people that God uses to accomplish great things. Nobody said Solomon was a perfect guy. It's not the reason that he got the wisdom. God still uses him in many magnificent ways, despite his inability to really use his own gift, which is kind of the second point. It really speaks to what happens when you try to live apart from God. Solomon, even though he acquired all this wisdom, it reminds us that pride always goes before the fall. When you start to think too highly of yourself, that's when you stumble yourself. And guess what? I really think that in part, God did this to Solomon on purpose. Because what we see at the end of Solomon's life, and I think he really was meant to be a perfect example for us of, even though you can have all this wisdom, if you try to do life without God, it's going to be vain. It's going to be empty. Solomon, in his wisdom, used that to his advantage many times. And he tried to pursue all these life pleasures as a result. And at the end of his life, when you get to Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verses 13 and 14, the final two verses of the entire book of Ecclesiastes, after he spends the entire book talking about what it is to try to live without God, he says, "The end of the matter is this: fear God and keep his commandments." I really think God used Solomon purposely to demonstrate you could be the wisest person in the world and yet you can waste most of your life. So we still have a lot that we can learn from Solomon as the author of this book. But the second source in this book really is God. God is really, he's the divine author of Scripture. Everything he uses men to write it. But God is truly the divine author. And as we just learned in the passage about how Solomon got the wisdom came from God, right? God is the source of all wisdom. I have a few passages from the book of James that if you guys have time in your small groups, I'll allow you guys to have some time to go through on your small group questions, which I realize I haven't given to you here. I'll give those to you now so you can pass those around. But if you have some time, read about how God is the source, what divine wisdom looks like versus worldly wisdom. It's incredible. And if this is wisdom that comes directly from God, then we do best to pay attention to it. If God is the one who's giving us the wisdom, then we do best to pay attention to it. Which leads us to really what the content is of this book. And I know it's kind of redundant to say this, but the content of the book of Proverbs is Proverbs. Proverbs is not just some title. Proverbs is actually describing the primary content of the book. It is made up of Proverbs. The first thing we have to understand is Proverbs is what we call wisdom literature. In other words, its substance is about wisdom. But there's a big misconception about wisdom, because wisdom is not just knowledge. You guys live in a world today where there is so much information out there that we think that we're really knowledgeable people. So the amount of information in our world has gone up, and yet, I don't know if you've noticed this, it seems like wisdom has gone downhill, because it's not just about how much you know. Wisdom is about how you live. Wisdom is taking what you know and understand and you put it into practice. It's not just about gathering up facts about life and the Bible. It's actually then living that out in your life. Actually, the word, the Hebrew word for wisdom, the word chokmah, it really means it's a skill to form and execute a plan for a desired result. It's skill, and that's really interesting to think about. Wisdom is skill. It's an ability to be able to live life well based on the knowledge that you accumulate. Essentially, it's worship in action, doing life God's way, and acting rightly upon what you know is true and what has been revealed to you by God. So a big difference between knowledge and wisdom. And secondly, Proverbs is made up of a bunch of, Proverbs. As we're going to see here, Proverbs are actually short but really impactful statements. Proverb can be just as simple as one verse, and you see that even though it's short and it's simple, it's packed full of information. I like to think of it like a transformer. You see a transformer in its, its automobile state. It can be like a really nice car. It seems simple, but inside there's a lot more to it, right? you start to unpack it and you realize there's a lot of detail that goes into it. That's what a proverb is. It's a short, simple statement, but unpacked it has tons of wisdom that it offers. But there are a few cautions you have to understand about proverbs. Caution number one is that they are not formulas for successful life. They're not formulas for successful life. In other words, they're principles that guide. They're principles that guide, but they're not promises that guarantee. So when you read a proverb, a lot of times our temptation is to think that that proverb is saying a factual statement about life. Anytime you live consistent with what it says, that's going to be the outcome. That's not true, because life is not about formulas. We don't live life by a standard of formulas. So what it's basically giving you here is consistent observations about life, the way that life should be, the way that life should be lived out, because not everything is a cut and dry situation. The most consistent example of that comes in Proverbs chapter 26. If you want to write this down and look at it later, Proverbs chapter 26 verses 4 and 5 is perhaps the most commonly referenced part of Proverbs. It says, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will also be like him." And then in verse 5 it says, "Answer a fool as his folly deserves, that he not be wise in his own eyes." Okay, so verse 5 says, don't answer a fool. Verse 5 says, answer him. So which is it? And the answer is yes. Because it's not always an ABC formula type of thing. It's saying there are different situations where it is appropriate for you to walk away from somebody who is foolish in their words or their actions, and there's another time where it's appropriate for you to address it. So proverbs are just essentially truths stripped down to the basic essentials in concentrated form. And I think this reinforces the idea that young worshipers need wisdom if they're going to live, or if they're going to understand and live out these principles. Which leads us to the second reason we need to study this book, because of what it offers. Because of what Proverbs offers us. Really, what verses 2 through 6 in this passage are like, it reminds me in many ways of the first page of a syllabus. I don't know if you guys get syllabus in high school. Do you guys get a syllabus? Okay. So a lot of times the first page is kind of what gets skipped over because it's the objective of what the class is supposed to help you do. Okay, well, verses 2 through 6 of chapter 1 of Proverbs is the objectives. It's saying this is what, if you study this book, this is what you can get out of it. And there's four things that you can get out of this book when you study it. The first is humility. Verse 2 talks about humility. It says, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding. Really, the question is, do you currently recognize your need to grow in learning? We've already unpacked what wisdom means, but hopefully you see, as I talk about wisdom, you see your lack of it. The word that he uses here for instruction is the word like correction. It really speaks to the idea of like constructive criticism. You know, when you're doing a speech or something and that people give you feedback about what you can do to improve, that's what this word instruction essentially is. It's to correct you. Maybe it's positive, maybe it's a little bit negative, but it's to correct you so that you do better. And the question is, are you humble enough to receive that? Are you willing to have people speak into your life to say, here's some areas of weaknesses that you need to grow in? To discern understanding, he talks about here. That's the ability to make decisions based on information. One thing that I typically see that is lacking severely in high schoolers, especially professing Christians who are in high school, is decision making. We see information out there, but we don't know how to process that and make good, God-honoring decisions. So the question is, do you believe that you still have much to learn, or are you a prideful know-it-all? I love the way that Rick Holland says this. He says, Solomon was wise enough to know that he wasn't wise enough. We saw that in the story, right? He recognized when God gave him a choice of what he could ask for, He's like, it's easy. I'm not wise enough. I'm not wise enough to rule these people. How many of us, let's just be honest here for a second, how many of us, if we were granted one wish from God, would actually ask for what Solomon did? Or how many of us would ask for the worldly things, money, honor, fame, whatever it may be? The question is, are you wise enough to know that you're not wise enough? Are you willing to grow? The second thing verse 3 offers us is integrity. Integrity. Look at what he says in verse 3. It says, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity. This is similar to the idea that you don't just hear your parents' instruction, but you actually obey it. You listen to it. You can say that you know something, but it's not really evidence that you know something until you show it, right? So you can say, yeah, Mom, I'll take out the garbage, but until you actually take out the garbage, you haven't shown that you actually learned. Okay, that's a silly example, but that's really what Proverbs speaks to. Are you willing to not just hear, but be a doer of the word? It speaks here to righteousness. That is morals that are consistent with God's character. You know what righteousness is? It's what we just talked about in the Ten Commandments. To live consistent with God's way of life. Justice, which is doing what is right and fair for everyone around you. Equity, it's really the word for integrity in every sense of the word. To be consistent with what you profess. So this verse really reinforces the idea of whether or not you're willing to put into action what you learn from others. So if verse 2 is about your willingness to learn, verse 3 is your willingness to follow through. Verse 4, the third thing that offers us is maturity. Verses 4 and 5 says to the wise man, or it says to give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear an increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. He uses two words here in verse 4. He says naive and youth. Naive is the word for inexperienced and immature. We're going to have a lot to say on that term in a few weeks when he speaks to the naive. But that word youth is really interesting. It's a word that would describe someone as young as 15 years of age, which, guess what? Sounds like most of us in this room here, right? It speaks to the young people. And so he's putting together those two groups intentionally, the naive, the young and inexperienced, together. He says that those who are in those categories, they lack prudence, knowledge, discretion. Certain aspects of life that you think that you get, but you're really ignorant to. Verse 5 really stresses the importance of hearing and learning. So rather than speaking up, you're willing to shut up and learn from other people. From those of you who are older and more experienced, your parents, your teachers, your small group leaders, your coaches. You stop questioning and challenging other people and you start to become receptive to what they're saying. You're humble enough to do so. Hebrews 5, 11 to 14. Mark that down. Hebrews 5, 11 to 14. Read that later. But the author of Hebrews really speaks to the silliness of Christians who don't grow up in maturity. He really rails on the audience that he's writing to in that passage. He's Hebrews 5, 11 to 14. He's really saying, listen, you guys are like, you're like kids who have never grown up. You continue to drink milk, but you're ready for solid food, but we're still doing the elementary principles of life because you're not growing in maturity. Your life as a Christian should resemble that of a human. To go from a baby to an infant to a toddler to a young kid to a young adult to a adult. To enjoy your spiritual immaturity and just want to live there is a sign of not just immaturity, but it's a sign that you might not even be a Christian if you're willing to camp out in your immaturity. So wisdom is ultimately about growing up and acting like a spiritual adult. And then finally, this book also offers us ability. It offers ability. This verse speaks to discernment. He says to understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. This is really about persistence and pursuing wisdom. As you gain more knowledge, you gain more understanding, you learn that you can make decisions better. You can live life better. You develop the ability to make complex decisions and even help others. So this really starts to expand your horizons of what you're able to do, not just for your own life, but really for the life of others. So it's funny, as you read through this list here, it almost kind of sounds like those infomercials that you see on TV that say, wait, there's more, and then it's like, wait, no, there's even more, and it just keeps adding. You're like, this is too good to be true.
Three Stooges in 1995.
Yeah. But this is all true, and there's no cost. What Solomon is laying out for you, what God is laying out for you here, it's a fact. It's a bundle package. All these things come together. If you are willing, and again, it starts right here. Are you willing to be humble? Are you willing to admit you are not wise enough? Leads us to the third reason that we should study this book. Because of what is at stake. Because of what's at stake. Verse 7 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction." Really, verse 7 stands as the gateway to the rest of the book of Proverbs. In other words, do you want to get to the rest of the book? Do you want to have access to wisdom like we've just talked about here? Then you have to answer the question in verse 7, do you fear God? Do you fear God? It's almost like in movies where you have the apprentice who's the master who's teaching the young and the immature student. In other words, you know, the master says, lesson number one. And in order to move on to lesson number two, you have to master the first task. Well, that's exactly what this is for the book of Proverbs. You have to answer this question. You have to really wrestle with this question, or otherwise the rest of the book's not really going to make a whole lot of sense. You cannot move past it until you've really considered what verse 7 is saying. The fear of the Lord is really an interesting phrase in the Bible. I didn't have time to throw it up here, but really, I think it's really helpful to think of the fear of the Lord as like a continuum. In other words, there's not just one strict definition of the fear of the Lord as it's described in the Bible. Because we think fear, we think of our you know, perceptions of what is fear in this life. Well, fear is often being afraid of something. And I'm not going to say that this definition is void of it, but it's definitely a lot more than that. Because I think that the fear of the Lord is something that progresses throughout your life. Because the fear of the Lord begins when you start to understand who God is in relation to who you are. Because when you start to see who God is in His holiness, and you realize who you are in your sinful condition, guess what? You're going to be a little bit afraid, right? Think of Isaiah in chapter 6. We read that, our guest worship pastor read that this morning during our service. It reminds us when we see God for who He is and who we are, we realize, woe is me. I am unclean. I am sinful. And it fears for our life because we know that we're standing in the presence of a just and a holy God. But it doesn't end there. The fear of the Lord is described throughout the Bible is something that it progresses from being afraid to being an attitude of worship. Because whenever you see this phrase, the fear of the Lord, pretty much throughout the Bible, this is fascinating. Whenever you see this phrase, the fear of the Lord, in its context, almost always it's preceded or it's followed by some type of act of obedience. In other words, to live in the fear of the Lord means that you live in a way that is consistent with the way God would want you to. It's an attitude of worship. It's no longer just being afraid of God, it's being amazed by God and wanting to live in a way that is consistent with how He wants you to live. And so that's why it's so much more than just being afraid of God, so much more than just being a worshiper of God. It contains all those elements to it. So to fear God is to grow in your knowledge of Him and respond appropriately. But you'll notice that verse 7 really presents us with two options that are going to be consistent throughout the entire book of Proverbs. You will either be wise or you're going to be foolish. It says in the second half of verse 7, fools despise wisdom and instruction because the fool lives for himself rather than God. Plain and simple. His life is about living life his way, not God's way. And this is really the perfect illustration in Matthew 7, when we did the study on the Sermon on the Mount. Remember, Jesus ends the Sermon on the Mount with the parable of the wise and the foolish builder, right? It says that the wise man was the one who built his house on the rock. And so when the rains came and the floods and everything, his house stood. Well, what's that a reference to? It's a reference to building your life on the words of Christ. It's to have your life rooted in Jesus and what Jesus wants for your life. And that's contrasted with the fool, the foolish builder, who built his house on the sand. So when the rains came and the floods and everything else, his house was completely washed away. It was completely destroyed. So you notice, that's the perfect illustration of what verse 7 is all about. He's saying, listen, if you are wise, you will build your life on the words of God. But if you're foolish, you're going to despise wisdom and instruction. You're going to push it aside. You're going to try to do life your way, and its end is not going to be pleasant. So Proverbs essentially opens by asking the question of whether or not you want to worship God. That's a lot at stake. So how you respond to the book of Proverbs is a reflection of your attitude toward God. So what wisdom does God want us to gain from this introductory lesson as we venture into the rest of the book? It's that you wise up by living in the fear of the Lord. I think it's a tendency of many to see the book of Proverbs as a book of morals. Basically how to live well in life and find success in certain situations or relationships. And while there may be a nugget of truth to that, really it misses the point drastically, because that phrase, the fear of the Lord, comes 15 times in this book. God himself, or the Lord, is referenced numerous times. In other words, this book is heavily theological. It's very God-centered. Meaning you might find some success in the eyes of the world if you live by some of the principles that you learn from here in this book. But if your life is not rooted in the fear of the Lord, none of it matters. Because you have to build on the right foundation to start. And if you do, you're well on your way to developing wisdom and a life that is pleasing to God. And not only that, take a step further, you're on your way of modeling the life of your Savior, who himself was the perfect personification of wisdom in action. That's a hefty thing to want to aspire to, but that's what the book of Proverbs is going to lead us towards. So let's pray, and you guys can get to your groups here. Father, again, thank you so much for tonight and the opportunity to study these opening verses together. We thank you for the wisdom that you gave to Solomon to be able to communicate to us, and we just pray that, Lord, you would, above all, humble our hearts. We know that we cannot move forward in the study if we do not first and foremost humble ourselves and recognize that we are not wise enough. So give us that understanding, Lord, so that we can live lives that are pleasing and honorable to you. We ask in Christ's name. Amen.